good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. You're watching The Future is Female. This is the show where we find the extraordinary in every woman. My guest today, I'm delighted to introduce, is Dr. Claire Chan Sui-Ching. She is an Associate Professor of Ethnomusicology at the Music Department of the Faculty of Human Ecology at University Putra Malaysia. She is currently an executive committee member of the Southeast Asian Directors of Music, SEADM in short, and she has served previously as a National Liaison Officer for the International Council of Traditional Music and was the chief editor of the Malaysian Journal of Music. She wears many hats, and I'm glad that she got to take time out of her day to be with me on the show today. Hello, Claire. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Very good to have you here. I have never spoken to an ethnomusicologist before. Over the years of my career as a journalist, you will be the first, and I'm very curious to know more about ethnomusicology. What is this field, and how did you get into it?
Well, in short, ethnomusicology is the study of music, but in the context, in its cultural context.
Music in its cultural context.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we are basically studying the people who make the music, the musicians who create the music, the composers, the singers, and the musicians.
Okay.
Yeah. So in order to understand the reasons for them to compose the music, we have to understand the whole cultural background that shapes these concepts in their musical performances.
Okay, because the way they live, their cultural norms, the way society, the fabric of the society, all informs the way they compose, create, perform music. Is that right?
Yes, that's true.
Okay, excellent. Okay, give me an example of some of the music in a cultural context that you've studied before.
Or shall we talk about the mummery?
We can talk about anything. So what are some of the examples that you can share with us?
Well, I can talk about a song from the mummery. So this is the song of a moyang, a ancestral spirit, is Jaboy. Okay, Jaboy. So this is a song about this character, this moyang, this spirit. And this character is like very mythical character to the Orang Asli, other the mummery. So it has his legs are kind of like shaped backwards. Its nose is like upturned.
Okay.
Yeah. So this character is really afraid of the rain because his nose is upturned.
Oh,
yeah.
To catch
upside
the
down.
Rain. Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Might drown from the rain.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this character is always hiding under a down palace leaves when it rains. So these are the stories about these Moyang Jabos. So there's a song on Moyang Jabos too. So yeah, these are how the myths and the legends actually influence and shape the song.
Okay, all right. So we'll come back to Moyang Jabos. Okay, but I do want to ask you how you got involved in studying the musical life of the Mamari indigenous tribe. So the Mamari being one of the indigenous tribes in Peninsula Malaysia, for Orang Asli. And you worked with them to study how their songs and their culture intersect. Tell me a little bit more about studying that.
Okay, so I was doing my PhD, and you need a topic for your PhD, right? So before embarking on the study of Orang Asli, I was actually working on Chinese music, Chinese drumming music.
Oh.
Yeah, the 24 Jielingku, or the 24 festive drums.
Right.
So I finished my master's on that, but I had a little bit of difficulty with language because I don't really speak Mandarin that well. I'm Cantonese, by the way. So I thought that, okay, next step, I really need to find a group that I can really converse with.
Right.
Yeah, and then I decided, okay, let's look at the indigenous people of Malaysia, the Orang Asli, who are very well, not well studied. And of course, the first thing when you want to locate a group, you'll be looking at the internet.
Yeah, just Google.
Yeah, and I found that the Mamari is a kind of people like are very well highlighted in the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started to make my connections with the group in Kampung Sungai Bumbun, with Masna, my friend now, and Julida. So I started making connections with them, and slowly, whatever performances they did, wherever they ran, I followed them.
Okay, so you essentially kind of followed them as they lived out their musical life, right? Or as they lived out their life and you saw how music informed their life. Mm. First of all, how was communication? Because you do need to know, would you need to know the language of Ma Mary to be able to understand their songs, their culture, and how that intersects?
Well, if I was doing anthropology, it would be very important that you actually learn the language of the people that you're studying. Mm-hmm. But I kind of like, because they could speak Malay, so I kind of took advantage of that. So,
but that also helps, because then they can kind of give you the context, right, of the language, as opposed to as the dictionary definition of it.
Yeah. So they were very good with adapting, so they could speak with me in Malay. But for the songs, I actually sat down with them and wrote out all the lyrics and talked to them and, you know, analyze it together with them.
Do they have a lot of songs?
Well, the ones that I recorded in Kampung Sungai Bumbun, I actually recorded 9 songs.
Wow. Yeah. So you had them perform it. Okay, paint a picture for us. What does a song entail, a Ma Mary song entail? Mm. Are there a lot of singers? Are there a lot of musical instruments? What musical instruments are involved?
Okay, so we are talking about a small musical ensemble. Mm. So you would have the vocalist, which is usually Mazna. And then you would have a group of ladies playing the bamboo stamping tubes.
Wow, what is that?
These are mainly bamboos, and you have 2 tubes and you hold it and you stamp the tubes.
I have seen pictures of that before, okay.
Yeah, so that one provides the rhythm for the musical ensemble. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, there is a musician that actually plays the violin or the viola, and that musical instrument was sort of adapted into their tradition as time went by, where anthropologists came in and researchers came in, so they sort of gave gifts to the Ma Mary, and the Ma Mary took the violin and played their indigenous songs on it.
Okay, yeah. All right. So when you say indigenous songs, what are the songs used for? I'm thinking about, you know, is it used during festive occasions, weddings, celebration of birth? How did the songs come to play into the lives of the community?
Okay, so the songs that I research on are mainly recreational songs. So songs that were accompanied previously, like a harvest festival, a durian harvest festival, or a paddy harvest. And they also have healing songs, but that tradition has been sort of lost. So I have not much knowledge on it, but I did read about it in Wazir Jahan Begum Karim's book. Mm-hmm. They have Kutai songs, but that's not what I have been researching. So the ones that I'm doing are the recreational songs. So these songs currently is actually accompanying dances that they perform during the Ari Moyang.
Okay. Yeah. That's their celebration, right?
Yes.
Okay. So they perform. Can anyone sing the song, or does it have to be... What makes Mazna special, that she's the one who to perform the songs?
You sort of need to have a little bit of vocal ability, capacity, okay, and bravery. And I mean, the villagers know the song, but they just hum it. Mm. But she's the one that has been given the role of the main singer. Okay. Yeah.
Is the knowledge passed on? I mean, is it being preserved and passed on?
Right, so this is a good question. So Mazna and we have been talking about, hey, how can we get her grandchildren to be interested in learning the musical heritage? Mm. So because Mazna and I have become like friends.
That's good.
So, yeah. So we chat, we gossip, we complain a lot. So eventually then I say, okay, let's do some workshops together. Yeah. Mm. So for the past few years, I just been coming to the village to collaborate with Mazna, to sort of like make their kids interested in learning their songs.
Mm. And what has been the reception? Are the younger generation of the Ma Mary community, are they interested in learning, in carrying this tradition forward?
I think for children, if you make it interesting and fun,
make it into a game, make it something fun that they want to participate in, right?
Yeah, then it's they don't think of, oh yeah, I have to, you know, perpetuate this tradition. So it's part of like, Yeah, I'm learning songs. I'm having fun at the same time because we took them to visit the beach, and you know, experience the Mount Mary environment before that. And they enjoyed jumping into the sea, and finally, they didn't want to sing.
Okay, Claire, I do have to ask you: are Mount Mary songs just for the Mount Mary community? Mm-hmm. Can other communities, other ethnicities, can they learn and sing Mount Mary songs? I know the language is an issue, but I mean, I know a lot of people who've memorized K-pop songs and don't speak the language. But is it cultural appropriation, or is it something sacred about the songs that that we're not cognizant of?
Okay, so the songs that I'm working with, they actually don't have, well, they are performed to sort of invite the spirits to celebrate Arimoyang with the people. Mm-hmm. But then they also can be formed in a recreational context. So I don't think that there's any harm in performing it. Mm-hmm. And actually the Mount Mary group, they are very open to people learning their songs.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, they're happy. I think they're happy to have other children actually learn to sing the Mount Mary songs.
Was it, okay, well, I've got so many other questions, but I've just noted the time. We might have to go for a quick break, but we'll come back and continue this conversation with ethnomusicologist Dr. Claire Chan. We'll be right back, stay tuned. Welcome back to The Future's Female. I'm Melissa Idris, and I'm chatting today to Dr. Claire Chan. She is an ethnomusicologist, and she has studied the songs of the Mount Mary Indigenous community. Claire, very quickly, when we talk about these songs, how do they relate to the environment, to the natural environment, to ecology and sustainability? Because, you know, it's very much part of the community's life, right?
Well, I actually have some. I studied some documentation on the songs in the 1900s. The one that were collected by two anthropologists, Skeet and Blagden. So they had actually collected 42 songs, and most of the songs were about the flora and fauna of the Kerry Island, which used to be a mangrove forest area before it was converted into oil palm estates.
Ooh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you actually learn through songs what the environment was like before it was lost.
So before the 1900s, the Kerry Island was actually a mangrove rainforest. Mm. And then after that, I think now two-thirds of the Kerry Island is now oil palm and estates. Yeah. Mm.
What were some of the challenges that you faced in trying to in the research, like specifically with the Mount Mary community?
Trying to understand, I guess I should talk about the continuity of the songs.
Sure.
Like previously, they had so many songs about these animals and these the plants. But recently, I noticed the lyrics were changing.
Oh.
So when I was analyzing the lyrics, so there were songs that, you know, you had partial stanzas, partial verses that were talking about previous animals like the siamang or the civet cat. Or the gajah. Then suddenly in between there's interspersed all these lyrics about domesticated animals like and plants in the village.
Like cats and dogs. And,
yeah. Okay. So and then like flowers that they grow, right? So the songs are actually evolving with the life of the Mount Mary.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, there are some verses that are maintained from the past, from their moyang, but they integrate this with what is their current surrounding. Yeah.
So it's almost as though the songs evolve with the way their lives evolve.
Yes.
So it's not kind of maintained in the historical.
Yeah.
What are some of the kind of important insights that you've learned from this very important research? Like, have you learned anything about working with these communities, understanding their cultures and music?
I think what I would be passionate about is the environment. So from looking at the songs, we know that the animals are not existent in Kerry Island anymore because the people don't talk about these animals anymore.
Yeah. Oh, you mean so the, when you talk about the continuity of the songs, those animals disappear from the lyrics, is that right?
Yes, because the whole environment is now oil palm estates. Oh, okay. So you had so many very exotic animals. I also like these kind of exotic things like, whoa, sun bear, whoa, you know, all these exotic animals. Mm. But the children don't talk about them anymore because it's not in the environment.
They don't see them anymore.
Okay. So maybe some of the things that we could do with the children is like get them to learn what was before and about the animals that used to exist. And it's kind of like leading them to learning about animals. This is educational, right? And then also to maybe compose new songs about what is in the current environment now.
Are new songs being composed by Mazna and her ensemble?
At the moment, not yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but maybe we could work with the children to like experience the current environment they are living with in, and the children could be inspired with the current environment and compose new songs. Mm. That is something that I have some plan to do with some of my colleagues. Mm. Yeah, but of course, this is all my idea. So I really, in ethnomusicology, we have to be really careful that we don't top-down ideas, like this is my idea and I want to do it. I think it's always very important to actually talk to the culture bearers like Mazna and have a discussion over what we want to do with the community.
I see, so there's that you have to be sensitive to what you want. I like that. Yeah. That's very good that you don't kind of just impose your ideas, especially as academics and not really understanding the culture. How do the communities work together? I love that you're doing workshops with the younger generation, but are there ways to involve the community more? I know Mamari, performs sometimes for tourists, particularly around that area, and during their festivals. Are there ways that this can be scaled up in a sense, but with the community's involvement?
So what has been happening now is like the music and songs are now just more representative of the Maori culture from the view of the tourists. But what is not happening now is new song creations. And there is an issue of why there are no new song creations. The songs are just to represent the Maori, right? So maybe this this whole thing evolves the whole process of modernization, the education system that and then also the transmission of knowledge from the elders to the children are not happening. Mm. And so there is some kind of gap happening there.
Mm. Wow, okay. Mm. So is it inevitable that just because they're modernizing, we'll lose this wonderful heritage, right?
Yeah, so this is why Mazna, and she's really a very strong woman.
Good for her.
She's very keen and passionate about, you know, getting her children to learn the tradition. But this is only one part of the community. The other part of the community has sort of like, some have embraced modernization. So some have also have other ideas. They don't think that they want to continue the culture. So there's one group that is still maintaining this and want to continue perpetuating the culture. So because they're passionate, then I would like to work with them.
Okay, yeah, you kind of take on that passion that they have as well. When I think about other, groups or communities and their music and how it's been modernized, it continues on, right? Can it be the same for the Maori tribe? Can their music be modernized, in a sense, modernized?
Well, it depends on what the children want, because the songs come from the children, from the people. They are not static songs that, you know, you just memorize what your grandparents sang. Mm. There's no individual personality in the songs. So it's their songs. So, but the tradition is somewhere. The songs are somewhere. The tunes are there. The rhythms are there. But it just maybe evolved to adapt to whatever the children want to do. I think that should be something possible. We shouldn't like get the children stuck them.
Yeah, keep them in one box, right? And not have them add their own perspectives and views. Is there anything that makes the music unique in terms, I don't know, from other types of music?
Well, they do have a certain the rhythm must use usually produced by the bamboo stamping tubes, and then the singing style, of course, this maintains this kind. I think the language actually sort of shapes the singing style, and this singing style is unique, which with Mazna, maybe the current generation might sing more smooth kind of tunes, but I guess it's inevitable, right? We can't force children to sing like what your parents used to sing.
Okay, yeah. Are there any other indigenous communities that you want to study as well? Because I'm sure with each community there are differences in the way they live their musical life.
Yes, I actually recorded a group called from the Jakun in the Enda Romping Forest. Mm-hmm. Their songs are really beautiful, and I just wish I had, I mean, maybe I need to get my students to go and do the research because I can't cover too many things.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's Jakun songs from Enda Romping. Actually, they are on, they are recorded and they are on the internet. So if you want to search for Jakun songs, just send songs of Jakun from Enda Romping.
Are there a lot of ethnomusicologists in Malaysia? I feel like we have so much musical heritage that's untapped still. Yeah. Are there enough people studying this topic?
We need to encourage our students to for the love and passion for the music heritage of Malaysia, because these are songs that didn't come from elsewhere. They're not external influences. They were inspired by the sounds of the forest, the animals, and the people here, actually. Yeah,
it literally is organic. It's come from us, right, from this land. What is it that you hope to achieve through your work and your research as an ethnomusicologist?
Well, I would hope to see the children that I'm working with learning the songs, and also, you know, I think that it's important. They are really like digital gadgets now, right? So I was like, oh, why don't we get them to learn interview skills? So they use the gadgets themselves. They record. They are the ones that actually sort of sustain the culture with the help of the ethnomusicologists supporting them. I think the role should be on the children, and I think digital gadgets will actually interest the children, like, you know.
If you introduce technology into it, it's also another element to make it easier to record or capture or compose.
Yeah, exactly, compose, right? Now they can do so many things with the technology, right?
That's right. Maybe that might interest them. And in the couple of minutes that we have left, I'm very curious to know this field. How would you like to see this field grow, particularly in Malaysia? You said there's not a lot, but how are you hoping to see it evolve?
Well, you know, ethnomusicology is an evolving field now also, because now we study a lot of popular music. And
study popular music?
Yeah, because it's in line with humans and the cultural context.
Also, how popular music fits into the day and age of our current lives?
Yeah, like how probably globalization, global media influences the pop music of today. Yeah.
Oh, is it like the example I gave where we have people memorizing K-pop songs and...
Okay. Yeah, we also have our own Malaysian K-pop group. But it's different from the Korean K-pop. So that is something like, what is the Malaysian element in this K-pop that makes it different from the one in Korea? So those are things that we are interested in learning about.
Fascinating. Thank you so much for teaching me about this field of ethnomusicology. I'm fascinated to know, and I'm so glad to hear that there are efforts to preserve this musical heritage. I appreciate your time, Dr. Claire. Thanks for being with me on the show.
Okay, welcome. Thank you.
That's all the time we have on this episode of The Future is Female. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching, and good night.